The hour of 10:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee. Members, we're going to have a continuation of the Office of Higher Ed. I had four people on my list for questions: Representative Knorr, Representative McDonald, Representative Hicks, Representative Cleavorn. And if the office wants to get up, and then for the record, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Dennis Olson, serve as the Commissioner of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education.
Representative Knorr, you're first on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I think the just wanted to say thank you for all the great work that you have done. I had a quick question about the not only college, you know, the state changed no need for college for up to 75% of the jobs of the state. How are we doing the work of creating that opportunity for students while we're encouraging them to join the workforce? What are we doing to make sure that they get college credits, not only in high school, but also continue while they're working, so that we can make sure that students are not just being pushed to the workforce rather than acquiring the higher education that they need?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Knorr, thank you for the question. You know, certainly a multifaceted question. You know, I would say our commitment remains the same to the statewide attainment goal. Our commitment remains the same to providing high school students with an opportunity to earn credits through a multitude of different ways, you know, whether that be through PSEO or concurrent enrollment, you know, or other opportunities for credits as well. You know, this really doesn't change the work that the Office of Higher Ed, or, you know, frankly, our systems provide, our campuses provide. You know, I will say that, you know, the governor's announcement is one of probably about, I believe, close to 15 states now that have made similar policy recommendations. You know, the Georgetown Center for I believe Economics and Workforce, CEW, I can't remember the exact acronym, but you know, they're projecting that, you know, over 70% of jobs by the year 2031 will require some sort of post-secondary credential, you know, more than likely a degree, you know. And so while the announcement by the governor for the job requirements for the state, you know, certainly sends a message, it also requires agencies to do a lot of different analyses on current job postings, on future job postings, to make sure that, you know, if there are opportunities for comparable skills or experience to be demonstrated, that that be considered. And so, you know, a lot of work still to do by Minnesota Management and Budget and our central HR functions, but you know, certainly doesn't change our goals and trajectory at the office.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I think also from the private sector, all the major companies are now also hiring students from high school, and they're training them. Can we also consider those training as a certification? Can we collaborate with the employers to make sure that we can capture that data in terms of reaching the attainment of 75% of the population getting some sort of higher education?
Mr. Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Knorr, yes, absolutely. And, you know, I hope at some point I have an opportunity to sit here along with my colleague from Deed, Commissioner Verilak, because, you know, we're working on that very thing, actually. And actually, you know, really exciting opportunities to bring, you know, new modes of learning, you know, not only to students, but to the workplace as well. I did mention when we were here last Thursday that we now have the opportunity to include industry-recognized credentials within the statewide attainment goal. You know, that alone is going to be a game changer, because not only are we talking about degrees or diplomas or certificates, but also industry-recognized credentials and making sure that those are on equal playing field in terms of attainment statewide.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald is not here, so we'll go to Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair. And committee members, I wanted to talk a little bit about the North Star Promise. I know we talked about that a little bit last hearing. And I just want to clear up some questions that I had. So has that started?
Commissioner Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hicks, it has started in implementation phase. It will be available starting fall semester of this year.
So just to clarify, no one.
Representative Hicks.
Sorry, Chair. I'm out of practice. They let me take a vacation. It was a bad plan. So just to clarify, no one is currently on the North Star Promise, correct?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hicks, that's correct.
And then I know we talked about last.
Representative Hicks.
Sorry, Chair.
We must have order.
I'm sorry. I need more caffeine. I know we talked about last dollar versus first dollar, and we went through that right at the end, and I think I could use a refresher. Could you help me understand how last dollar applies in the North Star Promise?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hicks, I could give you kind of a basic overview, but if it's possible, Mr. Chair, I'd like to call up Megan Flores or others from our office who'd be able to make those distinctions a little bit more clear.
All right. See, she's getting ready to come up, so. So, Manager, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, good morning, Chair Pawlowski, committee members. My name is Megan Flores, and I serve as the manager of state financial aid programs for the state of Minnesota. So I believe the question was related to last dollar programs and how they work. The way that the law was written is that federal, state, and institutional gift aid, as well as third-party gift aid, would first come into consideration when doing the math. So the first step would be to calculate an individual student's tuition and fees on a semester basis based on their individualized credit load and charges on their student account. Then subtract out any federal gift aid, any state gift aid, any institutional or third-party gift aid, and then the remainder for eligible students for North Star Promise would have it covered by the North Star Promise scholarship. That's how the math would work.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair. So follow-up question on that. If my family made an adjustable gross income of $75,000 and had one child going to college, how much of that tuition coverage at a $15,000 institution would be North Star Promise, approximately?
Manager Flory.
Chair Pawlowski, Representative, I don't know that off the top of my head.
Thank you.
In the handout, we do have averages, so if you want to refer to the handout that we provided with the public projections we provided last week, we do have an estimate on the average award per sector for qualifying students for the program.
Members, it might not be a bad idea to flip to that. I don't think the pages are numbered, but it's second to the last page.
Yeah, it's Chair Pawlowski, members, probably easier if you start from the back, like take your handout, turn it over.
There was another handout that we just put into the packet today.
Yes.
And that's the handout you're referring to?
Yep, so it appears as page 11.
Okay.
On the new handout that looks like this. So not the presentation we did last week, but the handout from today, dated February 15th. And it starts the Honorable Gene Pawlowski, Jr. Chair.
Got it. Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you. This chart is really helpful. So when I look at this, I see that the average award is less than $3,000 a student. So thank you. That helps me understand and kind of put that into perspective. Second question, individuals to access North Star Promise have to fill out the FAFSA, is that correct? Do they have to have some sort of documentation with you all?
Yep, Chair Pawlowski, committee members, yes, that is correct. A student applies either via the FAFSA or the Minnesota DREAM Act, depending on the student's individual circumstance.
Thank you.
Manager Flores, is there legislation requiring that high school students fill out the FAFSA?
Chair Pawlowski, there is not in our state currently a requirement for a FAFSA filer for high school graduation.
I know there's not a requirement now. My question was, has there been legislation introduced? I was with a group of students this morning in my office, and apparently there has been legislation introduced to do that. And They were asking where it would go, and I didn't know if it would go to this committee or whether it would go to the K-12 committee. Do you know which committee that would go to, Commissioner?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, to answer your first question, yeah, there has been legislation floated. I think in draft form. I don't know that there's actually been a full-blown bill introduced throughout history, but the last few years that I'm aware of, and it actually prompted us to establish our FAFSA completion goal, which we currently have in statute. But in terms of your second question about where it would come, probably both committees, to be honest, because it would require a lot of support, more than likely an appropriation for additional school counselor supports and other pieces at the K-12 level, and then here as well for us to track.
Commissioner, now you've said the magic word appropriation, and it would be appropriation at the K-12 level in order to fill that out. So it might come as a form of information to this committee, but the appropriation would more likely have to come from K-12.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And this is just my initial assessment without seeing any specific language, but the heavy lift really would be on the K-12 schools.
Now, just to remind anyone, if we have an ongoing appropriation, the word from leadership is we have no ongoing appropriations this session, at least in higher ed that I anticipate. So, Representative Hicks, you brought up a good point, and I know there, if the bill hasn't been introduced, it will be introduced soon. Representative Cleburne is next.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I want to start off with a couple of comments, then I would like to ask a question. So, towards the end of our last meeting, we talked about college and why different reasons people attend college. I'll just say it that way. And I have always been a firm believer of stackable credentials, right? You can begin in one place and end with a terminal degree if that's what you want. So I want to thank you and your team for working with our families and helping them through that process of where they can start and where they choose to end, so that we aren't, as Representative Knorr discussed earlier, only thinking about people as cogs for jobs. They're individuals who may wish to reach their full potential. And the job they have may not be the job that they see themselves in when they choose to reach their full potential, whatever that may be. So I want to thank you for all of that. I want to move a little bit to the state grant program and the chart that you put forward with the state grant. I have to find where the page is now.
Me too.
I'm pretty sure you gave us a chart someplace that had how many I appreciate that. Thank you. So when we talk about the University of Minnesota and four-year institutions, and then the private nonprofit four-year institutions, and then we add to the private nonprofits the private for-profits, you have 38% going to nonprofit and private, and then you have 35% going to the University of Minnesota system. Do you have any idea what that actually looks like in the number of students that are served?
Commissioner?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Cleburne, just a quick clarification here. This chart that we displayed was only representing the current LME increase for the current biennium. It's not the total grant, but in terms of your question, if necessary, we can call up Nicole Whalen from our research division to help talk about the number of students.
All right, thank you.
Representative Cleburne, do you want to have that happen?
If it's possible. I'm just trying to get an idea of how many students are served.
Is she here today?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nicole Whalen, and I am the State Grant Research Manager with the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. To answer Representative Cleburne's question, I don't have the full breakdown of the numbers right in front of me. We are in the midst of finalizing our State Grant end of year report, so I'm happy to send that along when I do have it. Typically speaking, the student count would break down pretty similarly. So if you look at the proportion of students in two-year programs versus four-year programs, and then the in two-year programs, the vast majority attend Minnesota State Colleges, and then among four-year programs, it is broken out fairly evenly as it is here in the award language. I think the reason why I didn't include recipient charts is for that reason, because they would have looked pretty similar.
Representative Kleber.
Mr. Chair, I would just ask that information be provided to the committee.
Yes, I think we'd all like to see that as we're moving forward here. So thank you. Representative Kleber.
That's all. Thank you.
Representative McDonald isn't here. If any other member has a question, this would be the time to ask. We'll have the Office of Higher Ed before us again, so something else comes up, you'll have that opportunity. All right. I have just one question before you leave. Do you track how we have three campuses in the Minn State system that are offering free tuition? Pine Tech, we have Austin, and now we have the Technical College in Monona. Do you track their enrollment, and do you track how they're doing with that free tuition, particularly when the question was referenced by Representative Knorr? Almost all of them tend to focus on area high schools. So do you track how they're doing with that program, those programs?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. Yes, in that we get all of our reported information directly from the campuses and from the system in terms of enrollment, so there isn't any additional tracking mechanisms that we have that differ from what the systems would report to us.
So, Commissioner, if I were to request that you present to us the numbers of students, particularly at the high school level, that are involved, could you do that from those three areas?
Mr. Chair, potentially. That's something we could work with the system on undoing and, look at all the data sets available to us, certainly.
I would like to make that request because I think in anticipation of the North Star Promise, I think we're going to have a much larger connection with area high schools than we've ever had in the past. And we have three examples already in play. I know that in Winona, in the two-year last fall, they had 11% increase in enrollment, and they're anticipating a 13% increase in enrollment this coming fall. Almost not all of it, but the vast majority of it is from the five area high schools. So if you can get that information so that we would have some idea what to anticipate with the North Star Promise, it would be appreciated.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, glad to do that. And I will say I appreciate you zeroing in on those relationships in particular because, those are certainly examples within the state that we could learn from. Great things happening at all three of those campuses and partnerships with their area high schools. I will say, too, it's forecasting some of the elements of our policy bill that will be coming before the committee too that look to clarify some of the language around those local relationships.
Yes, Commissioner, I'd like to talk to you about your policy bill. I think I introduced it yesterday.
Yes, sir.
Yes, and I think it was given House File 4000, which apparently has caused some humor in the building. And We'll be talking about house file numbers as we proceed during session. So,
all right, Mr. Chair, thank you. And yep. I'm a funny guy too. At least some think so.
Well, if you had anything to do with them doing it in the corner, I'll let you know later.
All right.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. So we have Chancellor Olson, and I don't know who Chancellor Olson wants to bring up with him first, but. Is it Vice Chancellor Shepherd?
Okay. Yes, sir.
So, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. And members, you have information in your packet. You might want to move to get that out. And I would save the information from the Office of Higher Ed so we can go back and reference it. So, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Chair Pawlowski, members of the committee, thank you for your service to Minnesota, and Chair Pawlowski, thank you for your many years of service to Minnesota's higher education system. I'm Scott Olson. I'm the Chancellor of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Prior to becoming Chancellor, I had been the President of Winona State University for 11 years, and prior to that, I was a Provost at Minnesota State University Mankato for 9 years. I look forward to working with you this year and continuing the partnership that we've shared. It's critical to our faculty, our staff, and campus leaders. We serve 300,000 students across Minnesota, and that's Minnesota's future workforce, and that's why this partnership is so critically important. I'd like to take just a minute to introduce some folks in the crowd that are with us here today. We have the chair of our Board of Trustees, Roger Moe, is with us here, as well as Trustee Don Erlinson. We also have with us one of our bargaining unit leaders, Nicole Emerson from MAEP. And most importantly, we've got all these students from the state universities across Minnesota. So thank you, students, for being here today. It's so important that you're engaged with us. Thank you for the historic investments you made last session in higher education. We welcome the responsibility to provide this committee with the most up-to-date information on how your investments are going and how it's affecting enrollments and other things in Minnesota. We sincerely appreciate that this committee held hearings in November. It provided us an opportunity to share how we were spending the appropriation up to that point, and today is going to be a bit of an update on that. As we discussed in November, Vice Chancellor Mackey provided leadership in getting the funds out to the campuses in a timely manner, which allowed us to provide the level of detail we were able to give you in November. Along with Vice Chancellor Bill Mackey, Interim and Associate Vice Chancellor Paul Shepard, and Associate Vice Chancellor Kim Lynch.
Chancellor, I'm going to interrupt you just for a second.
Yes.
Did the hearings we have in October stimulate the system to implement the legislation that we passed last session?
Well, Chair Pawlowski, I believe we were in motion to do that, but it was great to have the opportunity to encourage faster adoption of things like advertising the North Star Promise and advertising the tuition freeze and other things like that. It's always good,
Chancellor,
to be in conversation.
I appreciated the meetings prior to those two hearings and then the response that we were getting from your system in implementation. And I would encourage other committees in the interim and even now, oversight is one of the best tools we have to make sure what we passed actually gets put into place. So I want to thank you, Chancellor, and I appreciate the fact that we were nudging you during those two hearings.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski. I'd like to move on to enrollment, and I actually have an answer to the question that you posed to Commissioner Olson. You asked what was going on with enrollment at Minnesota State College Southeast Technical. You asked what was going on at Pine Tech, and you asked what was going on at Riverland. And the reason, Chair Pawlowski, you asked about these was because these were institutions that have a local county or city commitment to fund local high school grads. And the answer to your question is that at Minnesota State College Southeast, the one in Winona, enrollment for this spring is up 15.74%. Enrollment at Pine Tech is up 4%. And enrollment at Riverland is up 5.8%. And we can provide more detail with that as we go forward.
So Chancellor, and I asked it of the Office of Higher Ed, is there a possibility of breaking down how the high school students are accessing that so that we would know that the high school students are having the opportunity at the high school level of getting a skill set before they graduate from high school?
Chair Pawlowski, I'm sure there's a way to do that.
Okay, if we can.
And we'd be happy to work with Mohi to do that.
In one of the future hearings, before we get to putting a bill together, I would really like to see that data. So thank you for this information, though.
Chair Pawlowski, so that good news isn't restricted just to those three institutions. There is generally good news on the enrollment front. Enrollment is showing improvement over fiscal year 23, and most colleges are experiencing better enrollments than they were projecting last June. You'll see that enrollment this year is up, and that's for the first time in a decade. I believe much of this is attributable to the work of the legislature, what you did to address affordability, freezing tuition, creating the North Star Promise, etc. That does have a huge effect on enrollment. Minnesota needs workers, and you have invested in a growing Minnesota's workforce. Having been on a campus during this time, I can tell you the resources that were provided were critical to maintain needed programs and services that students look to as they make their college and university decision. There's optimism that the trend of annual enrollment growth will continue into the near future, as you can see on slide 3 here. While our colleges and universities are always focused on strategic enrollment management strategies, we have benefited greatly from your investment last session. Increasing financial support for students through the North Star Promise, the State Grant Program, the Emergency Assistance Program, the Minnesota American Indian Scholarship Program, and others all help students make decisions about attending college. Freezing undergraduate tuition for 2 years, being able to invest one-time campus support funds, strategically supporting student success, increasing student recruitment, and expanding higher education academic programs all help serve more students at our colleges and universities, students who overwhelmingly, when they graduate, will stay and work in Minnesota. About 80% of our students overall stay and work in Minnesota after they graduate. Applications for fall of 24 are up system-wide by 18%. I think this is as the word gets out about the North Star Promise and the tuition freeze. We're seeing a lot of applications. We can't predict how many of those applications will turn into enrolled students, but that's really exciting to see an increase like that. Now I'd like to say a few words about the North Star Promise scholarship program that you created and funded and what we're doing to market this opportunity to potential students. Minnesota State has engaged in an outreach program at all of our campuses to drive the affordability message, and we greatly appreciate the partnership with the Office of Higher Education. I think what you're looking at are some examples of ways we're promoting these opportunities to students. Minnesota State's been advertising on Facebook, Instagram, radio, streaming audio about the possibility of free college tuition. We've also developed a marketing toolkit for all the colleges and universities with customizable graphics for Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, X, I guess, LinkedIn, email, and print for their use. Additionally, October was Minnesota State Month, a month where all colleges and universities waive the application fee. I'm happy to tell you that system-wide we've had an increase of 13% of applications this past October as a result of that incentive. We're taking the great work of the North Star Promise program a step further with a promise, the Minnesota State Promise, to all students to provide an extraordinary education that's affordable, accessible, enhances their quality of life, and ensures prosperous communities and Minnesota's future. With legislative help, you can see what the promise to students is. In addition to affordability, we provide wraparound services to meet student basic needs, something you supported last time, along with providing extraordinary academic programs taught by a caring and engaged faculty. We offer free tutoring and writing services to ensure students are prepared and the flexibility to meet students where they are at 54 campuses across the state. We're grateful for the legislature's investment in funding $75 million so we could freeze tuition over the biennium. With your help, we continue to be the lowest cost provider in the state. Minnesota State has developed a toolkit for campus marketers to customize their own frozen tuition ads, and campuses are coming up with their own unique and creative ways to get the message out to students, even though this winter there's not a lot of things freezing around here. I want to say a few words about the workforce development investments you made last session. You appropriated $13.5 million in one-time funding for equipment and learning environments, along with an additional $13.5 million to develop and expand industry sector programming. This funding will benefit our future workers and all the companies and communities they serve throughout Minnesota. Our college and university leaders are committed to raising a match of $13.5 million. You challenged us to a match of $13.5 million. As a matter of fact, at the State of the System address I gave this past fall, campus leaders committed to raising funds by signing a pledge, which you can see here. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Interim Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management, Paul Shepard, who would like to say a few words about the basic student needs funding.
Chancellor, Representative Robbins has a question. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chancellor, for being here. So I appreciate the earlier slides with the enrollment numbers, and it's very encouraging to see the trends. That's excellent. I wondered if for a future date, or just for the committee's benefit, you could provide that breakdown by each school so we could see the numbers in each school in the system. And also, I'd like to get information on the graduation rate. So I think it's really important. It's great to see this uptick in enrollment, but I'd like to see how many are completing their degrees. So I'm sure it's a lot to put together, but if you could just add that to your list and send it out to us, that'd be great.
Chancellor, Representative Robbins, I think that sheet is in your packet, at least for 2019 through 2023, or did you want to go back further?
That's, Mr. Chair, sorry. It doesn't have the graduation rates on it.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So, Chancellor, same sheet, but with graduation rates?
Chair Pulaski, Representative Robbins, yes, we can get you campus-by-campus breakdowns on graduation rates. And also, I have, hot off the presses this morning, data on enrollment for this spring, which I can give to Owen Worth when the hearing ends, and we can get it out for you.
Thank you.
Representative Robbins, is that it?
Thank you.
All right. So, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Absolutely. Chair Pulaski and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Shepard, and I have the honor to serve as the Interim Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management for Minnesota State. On behalf of the many students, faculty, and staff who have been involved in our innovative work to address basic needs in security, mental health, and other high-need student support services, thank you sincerely for your investment in addressing the barriers students are facing that interfere with their ability to access higher education and remain enrolled through graduation. Your support will provide more opportunities for students to achieve their goals. The investment made during the last session is already being used to sustain and expand basic needs and mental health resources currently available for all students at all colleges and universities in Minnesota State. The hallmark resource established through the legislative investment is Minnesota State's partnership with the United Way 211 program to establish a centralized basic needs resource hub. The resource hub was launched in the fall of 2022 and provides all students at all colleges and universities with access to basic needs and mental health resources available on their campus and also in their community via phone or text message 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. This innovative partnership is the first of its kind in the United States and has been identified as a national model for how systems of higher education can partner with community organizations to enhance student support. In the first year of the partnership, over 1,200 students contacted the resource hub, and the legislative investment from 2023 will be the main source of funding for this program moving forward and will allow us to continue to ensure that this unique and innovative partnership is available for students well into the future. A student who reached out to the resource hub shared this quote, and I would like to share it with you all. She said, "I've raised 4 kids on my own and have never accessed services. I reached out because I'm in transition and really struggling until I get my new job started. It was very hard to call that number, but I'm glad that I did, and the lady at 211 made me feel valuable, and I'm extremely thankful for her." All Minnesota State colleges and universities also received a portion of the $2 million of the legislative investment to enhance campus-based student support initiatives. The most common initiatives colleges and universities are implementing with this funding are expanding mental health services and training, including establishing partnerships with local mental health providers. They're also increasing the available funding for emergency grants available for students, enhancing campus food pantries, increasing support for transportation, housing, and technology, and resources for students who are also parents. As more students continue to utilize the resources established on campus, we will work with campus leaders to gather data regarding the impact of these initiatives and identify future opportunities to utilize this investment to further scale effective practices. Similar to our partnership with the United Way 211 program, the legislative investments provided an opportunity to establish resources available at all colleges and universities students can depend upon. Enhancing mental health support is the most frequently cited need among students and faculty and staff. Research has suggested concerns related to mental health are the most common reasons students leave their college or university experience before graduation. Minnesota State launched a comprehensive process involving students, faculty, and staff to identify a supplemental clinical mental health support technology solution that will provide students with access to clinical therapy, urgent care, peer support, and education and training programs. An 18-member committee reviewed RFP responses and advanced a recommendation to pursue a contract with the most highly evaluated vendor as measured by the RFP requirements and results from the vendor demonstration webinars open to the public. Next month, our team will seek approval from the Board of Trustees to begin contract negotiation process with this vendor. Implementation will begin in the fall of 2024 and will significantly enhance access to mental health resources for our students. This will indeed be transformational. Another example of a system-wide solution is technology to support the distribution of emergency grant funding. An unexpected car repair, housing challenge, increased utility bill are just some examples of needs students have that can be helped through emergency grant funding. Minnesota State has secured a contract with a technology vendor that specializes in the management and distribution of emergency grant funding for college students. This technology will allow students to complete a simple application via an app on their phone, and campus staff will, administering the program, will have functionality to manage and approve applications. The vendor facilitates the distribution of the funds to students in a timely fashion and provides data analytics helpful in understanding the evolving needs of students. The supplemental mental health clinical support solution and the emergency grant management technology are just two examples of new initiatives that simply would not be possible without the investment from the legislature in addressing basic needs in security, mental health, and other high-need student support services. Mr. Chair, that concludes my portion of the testimony, and with your permission, I would like to next introduce my colleague, Kim Lynch, who is the Associate Vice Chancellor for Educational Development and Technologies.
We have one question. Representative Rare.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had mentioned that the app that you have for the student emergency grant. I think we had talked about this earlier, but is there a cap on how much they can receive? And is there any verification, like what happens after they apply and then it goes and it's quickly sent out, kind of like unemployment insurance is very quick. They turn around in less than a week and get it out the door. But I know that they have lots and lots of checks and balances. Do you have anything in place?
Vice Chancellor Shepard.
Yes, Chair Pulowski, Representative Rarick. Yes, when a student completes the application via that app, there will be a verification that that student is indeed a student at that particular institution. Each college and university will have the ability to set parameters for the program, so making decisions about the number of awards they can receive, the amount that's really left up to the campus to administer those funds in the way that they best see fit. From there, once that application is approved within that system, the turnaround is indeed very quick, and students can receive those funds in a variety of ways, whatever best meets their needs.
Representative Rare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And you were introducing, is it Vice Chancellor Lynch?
Yes.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Chair Pulowski, members of the committee, my name is, for the record, my name is Kim Lynch, and I currently have the pleasure of serving as the Associate Vice Chancellor for Educational Development and Technology in Minnesota State. Well, I am thrilled to share how we are using legislative funding to reduce student out-of-pocket costs by expanding free offerings in course materials and resources, including through open educational resources, open textbooks, and implementation of zero textbook cost degrees, sometimes known as Z degrees. As you probably know, when textbook costs are high, students tell us they sometimes choose to go without, hoping to learn enough without buying the books or taking fewer classes to reduce the overall cost. When we can remove the cost of textbooks, we make college more possible. We make success in college more likely. You, as a legislature, have been strong and steady partners in this initiative of textbook affordability since 2020. And you've made it possible for us to expand this work from really individual faculty making that commitment to cohesive institutional commitment to this work. As shown in this slide, 10 colleges right now make it possible for a student to complete a Z degree, which is an entire degree without any textbook costs. As noted in the Z degrees report to the legislature that we submitted in January, I have a copy of that, but it's also in the reference library, aggregate savings now total over $8.5 million, or what has bumped up to what we've looked at as about $7 in textbook cost savings for every dollar invested in that program. So it's a really wonderful return on investment. We love to hear that. You believed in this work, and it is paying off for students. Not only that, but momentum is gaining each year. 6 colleges and 2 universities are exploring whether they can do that route, actually implementing, or they're expanding what they currently have available for students who want to take advantage of those zero textbook cost degrees. We're also currently reviewing 16 applications from 3 universities and 13 colleges that hope to do the same. Either, again, explore, fully implement, or expand what they're doing.
So, Vice Chancellor Lynch, I'm looking at your graphic, and I noticed the ones that have completed are all colleges, 2-year colleges.
Correct.
And then when I go down into in progress, I see only 2 state universities that are in progress. And given our research last session, those 2 would also have some of the worst declining enrollment over the last 10 years. So does it take massive declining enrollment to move to this position, or can we move to it without massive declining enrollment?
Chair Pelosi, members of the committee, in the original 2020 legislation, it specifically called out colleges because that was where it began. So what we did in the most recent legislation was to work with you to expand the availability of this program or opportunity to universities. It's a little bit of a heavier lift for them to get to a zero textbook cost degree, of course, because they have twice as many credits in that program. But what we've been encouraged by is not only the 2 that you see here, but we also have, I believe, at least 1 or 2 others that are looking to explore it and have made some headway already. Even though they are not represented in this particular initiative, MSU Mankato has done some great work with this and have shown their own cost savings, even though they don't have a Z degree specifically in this program.
Yeah, Vice Chancellor Lynch, I would really encourage it. I have been adjunct faculty for 3 decades. My students have never paid for a book. The only book is what I create. And I would hope that the universities would move to it. Chancellor Olson, did you want to make a comment?
Sure, Chair Pelosi. I know in the case of at least 1 institution, Winona State, it had very poor leadership over the last 11 years. There's hope for some improvement imminently.
Hopefully. Representative Morgamont.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Vice Chancellor, for this update. When I first was sworn into the legislature in 2019, one of the first bills that I put forward was funding for the Z degree textbook program. And so now that we're here 5 years later and this has had the chance to be implemented and take off throughout the state, I am absolutely thrilled to see the over $8.5 million in cost savings and to see that $7 per student for each $1 invested return on investment. That's wonderful. That's exactly the intention that I had when I put that bill forward, and I'm grateful to see it playing out exactly as hoped for throughout our state. The question that I had, Mr. Chair and Madam Vice Chancellor, is I see that one of the universities that I represent, St. Cloud State University, is in the in-process section of the implementation of the Z degree program. Could you please give more of an update on what exactly that means for the students that I'm representing and the students at the 7 other colleges and universities that are in process? Where are we at with that? And is there anything that we can do more at this time as a higher education committee to further the incredible impact that the Z degree textbook program is having?
Vice Chancellor.
Chair Pawlowski, Representative Wolgamut, first of all, thank you so much. Yes, you were a partner in this early work, and that it really has made a difference, and that's what, you know, we all love to absolutely see. In terms of the question you asked regarding the universities, I mentioned that the early legislation focused on colleges, so they're a little bit, they're sort of moving into it a little bit more slowly than our colleges were able to do. That said, we offered, through the funding that was provided, we really offered three opportunities for our colleges and universities to think about if this was something they could do, because we didn't want to give funding for implementation and then have it be a fail. We wanted to make sure that they were ready in various ways, culturally, financially, all sorts of ways. And so we offer really three opportunities. One is an exploration grant, and that's where you see this in process. It means that we gave them a small amount of funding to see if they would be ready to submit an application to get the implementation funding so that they would have the greatest opportunity for success. And so that's really where those are at. And I mentioned we have 16 applications. I can't give away the details yet because we're still reviewing them, but you may see some of those in the implementation sort of queue now that they've had a chance to explore. The other piece that we found really critical to the success of this, and we heard from our campuses, is that things change, right, on a campus. And so even though one might say we have a full Z degree, a change in faculty, a change in courses means that it's vulnerable. And so we also offered through this funding what we call expansion or sustaining grants, so that those that have this in place can come back and say, you know what, we're seeing some transition. We want to build up in this area, and there's funding available to do that. So we really see this as a full life cycle that helps sustain this work, not just have it a one and done and then it's over. So really excited about our ability to do that, which gets to the last question you asked, which is right now we've been working on one-time funding other than about $50,000 each year in the base funding. At some point, and it's probably not this time, but at some point if we return to you, we would love to entertain some more sustainable costs so that we know that we can complete that cycle every year and keep this work building in momentum. So,
Representative Wolgamut.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer, Madam Vice Chancellor. And I would just want to reiterate my commitment, and I'm sure the commitment of my colleagues on this committee, as we go forward with the implementation of this program, let us know what support you need so that we're clear that there is sustainable funding and support. Because in closing, I just want to thank you and everyone in the MnState system who has put work into implementing this. Again, those cost savings for students are real. It might seem like textbooks might seem like a small thing in the grand scheme of a tuition and curriculum and housing and all of those different things that go into a college education, but all the hard work that you have put in implementing this is making a real difference for students throughout the state. So thank you, and we look forward to continued partnership in increasing the success of this program. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chancellor?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to correct the record, several folks mentioned that in process there's 2 4-year universities. I see 3.
Oh, I'm sorry. Morehead. Next time, maybe the print could be a tad larger.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Pawlowski and Representative Wolgamut, Representative Davids, again, thank you for acknowledging the work that our folks across the system have done, because it really is at the faculty level that they have to commit to this. And that affordability piece is a game changer, but you know what? There's even more that I'm excited to share with you, if I get the right front arrow. We found through this work that our students of color, our Pell eligible students, and our first generation students participate equally, or in some cases a bit more, than those who are not students of color, Pell eligible, nor first generation. And so it's pretty exciting to say that when it comes to accessing free textbooks, there is no opportunity gap. All students are accessing this work. So that's really an exciting piece of the work. But you know what? There's still more. And so if you were looking in the packet, one of the things that we're equally excited about is I'm able to share from the Office of Institutional Effectiveness at Century College. We have affordability, we have equity, and we have course success. They completed a report covering course enrollment between fall 2021 and fall 2022. The study compared pass rates for students in courses with zero textbook cost compared to pass rates for all sections of the same course. The simple average of the difference for all of those open educational resource sections to all sections was plus 2.8%, with higher pass rates in 41 of the 67 courses. Very exciting. Century College is also a leader in using an online platform where these materials can be translated into 70 different languages and downloaded for both reading and listening. So they're doing some great work. They were some one of our early colleges to take part in this, and they've been really excelling. Thanks for your sustained support. We keep reaching for more. Our latest effort, just launching this spring, will bring faculty together with instructional designers and instructional technologists to develop free, full course materials for one of our transfer pathways, extending that Z degree impact across colleges and universities that offer that transfer pathway. Another way, as you all mentioned, to get the universities to be part of this, as well as the colleges, and to focus on transfer in a way that is affordable. We're on a roll, and you've made it possible. So I really sincerely thank you for that. With that great news, and with your permission, I'll turn the presentation over to Vice Chancellor Mackey to talk with you about one-time campus operational support.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the conference committee, for the record, my name is Bill Mackey, and I serve as the Vice Chancellor of Finance and Facilities for Minnesota State. I'm going to spend some time providing an update on the college and university operational funding from the approval of the biennial budget last session, and then conclude my portion of the presentation by discussing the unmet need that our colleges and universities have and their supplemental budget request. As you're aware, and as we updated you in November, the legislature provided $50 million of one-time funding for campus support. The funding was allocated to all of our colleges and universities, and it was based on estimated tuition revenue loss due to declines in enrollment our colleges and universities had from fiscal year 2019 to fiscal year 23. The bill included a floor of $300,000, so no college or university received lower than that amount. This funding has proven to be extremely valuable for our 26 colleges and our 7 universities, and has allowed the leadership teams at each of those colleges and universities to use that funding to what best met their needs for this biennium, whether it was a transition or bridge financing to reduce their operating budget for the long term, or to make investments into the college or university infrastructure, using the term infrastructure broadly in that definition. Just to put some specifics related to that, of the $50 million, about half of it, or $26 million, colleges and universities use to provide budget support for this biennium as they're going through and making budget reductions to reduce ongoing expenses to align with ongoing revenues. There was about $12 to $13 million was used for investments related to student success, implementation of strategic enrollment investment or management plans, or technology investments. So essentially half, 40 million of the 50 million used for budget support or used in investments that relate directly in some way to student success. So I know our colleges and universities were very grateful for that funding and have been able to utilize that to assist with their long-term planning. Moving to our Minnesota State stabilization, and thank you for fully funding this portion of our request last session. Our request was for $125 million, and with enterprise-wide activities included, the system received $128 million. This funding is used to address inflationary needs and help ensure our 26 colleges and 7 universities can offer the breadth of academic programs and student services that are necessary to serve our state. System-wide, our colleges and universities rely on state appropriation to cover about 55% of their general fund operating budget. We also testified last session and currently have that about 75% of our general fund budget is related to compensation costs. So it's critical that we have the ongoing revenues in order to cover the ongoing compensation costs. Without this funding or shortfalls to this funding, campuses are forced to make additional long-term budget reductions. And you may be aware that some of our colleges and universities are currently in that process of making difficult budget decisions. Moving to our supplemental budget request that was approved by our Board of Trustees at its November meeting and was submitted, as we testified last session and provided college and university specific data related to operating budgets, that even if Minnesota State were to receive full funding for operations and maintenance and a fully funded tuition freeze, which we did, some of our colleges and universities would still be faced with budget shortfalls. Again, the addition of the one-time funds for campus support help alleviate some of those issues in the short term. The primary purpose of this supplemental budget request is to address the new developments that emerged since the state passed its biennial budget. For Minnesota State and for the higher education sector in general, significant changes center around inflationary pressures and compensation and non-compensation costs that are currently higher than were estimated during the preparation of the biennial budget request in fall of 2022. Known increases in compensation, which again is about 75% of our budget, exceed the amount of available new resources that the system has this biennium. So colleges and universities, to various extents, are under pressure to make reallocations and reductions to cover these costs to prepare for the future. According to the estimates, when this supplemental budget request was put together, we estimate a biennial gap of $61 million, which is the amount of our request. A supplemental request of this amount would provide additional resources to support these new costs. In addition, continuing this amount as an annual base appropriation in fiscal years 26 and 27 would provide colleges and universities with a much less extreme drop in funding in those years. Reliable, ongoing operational funding is critical for colleges and universities so that they can maintain the programs and services necessary to fulfill their mission and the promises to their students and to their communities. This slide indicates the biennial funding received for fiscal year 24 and 25 and breaks it down between funding that's ongoing and funding that was one time. Again, we are appreciative of the historic investment made in Minnesota State of the almost $293 million in the column third from the right. As you'll notice, $125 million of it approximately is one time, with $168 million of it ongoing. The one-time nature of the student support portion, the $2 million, and the workforce and economic development portion of $27 million, more readily aligns with investments that can be made that are one-time rather than having to be sustained year after year. The area where our colleges and universities and where we have the most concern is the relation of the funding of the one-time being the $45 million in stabilization, as well as the $50 million in campus support, in that those aren't able to cover ongoing costs beyond those biennium, which again puts college and universities to various extents in budgetary stress. And while the $61 million request is an aggressive one that Minnesota State is making, as we brought this request through our process of consulting with our stakeholders, both our bargaining units and our student associations, there was a desire and a need articulated that $61 million perhaps was not an aggressive enough request to be made. But nevertheless, That was the request that the board approved and that we have submitted to the state. This slide in front of you, I just want to point to the fourth row of the current total funding that I think shows the challenge that we have in fiscal year 26 and 27, in that without additional funding, we have a reduction of about $50 million in appropriation between 25 and what the tail is in 26. And we have ongoing costs to cover during that time period, which if everything stayed as is as of today, colleges and universities would have to make budget reductions in order to cover those additional costs. So the second row from the bottom shows what the impact of a $61 million budget request being funded would look like for this biennium as well as for the future biennium. And again, this request, though, Chair Pelosi, you definitely tempered expectations, is nevertheless a need of our system and one that we will advocate for until we're at the finish line and we can no longer advocate for it. Mr. Chair, committee members, again, thank you for your strong support for our students, our colleges, and our universities and the communities we serve. That concludes my remarks, Mr. Chair.
Representative David, did you have a question? No, he didn't. Representative Rare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So let's just start with St. Cloud State. They saw pre-pandemic in 19, they had a little over 10,000 students. Now they're hovering right around 7,100 or so. And there has been talk about right-sizing, right? And $650 million over base was historic. The chair had a very generous target. And as you point out, that puts it at almost $1.9 billion. That's a lot of money. The higher ed budget is the third largest budget in the state of Minnesota. So it's about $4.1 billion in the biennium in total. And Minn State came close to getting just shy of half of that. So that was a pretty generous amount, one would say. So my question is, what is being done to specifically right-size is what was told to me, right-size some of these campuses that continue to see declining enrollment. St. Cloud State, for example, has much more going on than some of the other campuses. My district is just to itself. A lot of the students, high school students, graduation, the grad students and so on, used to go there. They don't go there anymore. It's not safe. There's a lot of issues there. It had reputation before all of the pandemic as not being really, really serious about academics and so on and so on. It's got a reputation in my area. So we propped up budgets to try to ease off as we right size. So talk about some of the right sizing. You haven't really talked a whole lot about what are we doing. You've also got a technical school in St. Cloud. Is there any same thing in Bemidji State? So you've got Bemidji State and you've got the technical school, and there was supposed to be some collaboration. So can you talk about the right sizing of some of the things as well?
Representative Mackey or Chancellor Olson, Chancellor.
Representative Pulowski, Representative Rarick. St. Cloud State is looking at revenue solutions as well as cost reduction solutions. So they've mapped out fairly substantial reductions in their workforce to, in your words, kind of right-size them to the number of students they currently serve. The overwhelmingly, the budgets of our colleges and universities are tied up in people. So to get to those kinds of numbers, you know, millions of dollars of shortfalls, you really have to do it by reducing the size of the workforce. And St. Cloud State and Bemidji State are both doing that. St. Cloud State's also interested in some kind of innovative revenue side stuff involving online programs that would reach outside of their normal footprint. And I believe they've had some success with their MBA program, for example, reaching students who maybe don't even live in Minnesota, but who enroll in that program through something called an online program management system. So they're trying some revenue side stuff, but most of it's got to be on the cost side, and they are, I'm confident that Bemidji State and St. Cloud State are going to hit their targets in terms of those cost reductions. But Mr. Chair, my colleague might have more details on that than I do.
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rarick, to add a couple points to Chancellor Olson's comments. One area that St. Cloud State has deployed, as well as some other colleges and universities, that is a direct result of being able to receive their portion of the $50 million in campus support funding, was to implement early separation incentives for retirements. And that's been done to varied success across the system, but our colleges and universities were able to utilize that additional cash to implement those programs with the idea of reducing their personnel in the long term. A second area that is being looked at is reducing the cost of managing the facilities. Our colleges and universities are looking at different ways where they're consolidating faculty and staff into less buildings. They're leasing out facilities in their communities to other public or nonprofit entities for utilization, where there's also a programmatic connection or related to mission. So those are a couple of the other strategies that are occurring at St. Cloud State and at our other institutions.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So I'm a graduate of Bemidji State, so I know the campus well. And when I took my vacation, my husband and I decided that we were just going to work instead of vacation. So we went up to Bemidji State, and we toured, and we went to Thief River, and we toured, you know, your campuses there and a few other places. But one of the things that we saw was Bangsburg Hall at Bemidji State, and it's in disrepair. And the reason I bring that up is because Bemidji State used to be this incredible draw for people that wanted to teach, but mostly wanted to teach music, because their vocal and their instrumental program was unbelievable. But now the building where everybody performed in and many of the professors work in is in great disrepair. And I'm just wondering, has that impacted the drop in enrollment? Because that used to be like the gem of the campus, and now it's moldy and falling down, basically.
Chancellor Olson.
Chair Pawlowski, Representative Rarick. I believe we're able to come in front of this committee in a little while to talk about our bonding request. And I don't remember if that one is on the HEPR list. It's not on the hall you're referring to, is not on the regular list. I'm inspired to think that you would spend your vacation with Senator Rarick visiting our campuses, and I'm offering to all members of this committee a travel agent service out of my office, that if you'd like to spend your vacations visiting our campuses, we can arrange this. I'd also point out, I believe in the second row here are a bunch of Bemidji State current students who you might want to visit with after, right?
Yep.
For their perspectives on that particular hall. I'm not familiar with that one, though, so maybe I need to go pay it a visit. Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor Mackey may know more about that particular.
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rarick, I spent 11 years at Bemidji State, so I have familiarity with the building you're referring to.
Representative David. Representative David. Vice Chancellor.
That was a good one. The challenge that Bemidji State University has, as well as some of our other colleges and universities, is being able to implement the comprehensive facility plans at our colleges and universities, with addressing deferred maintenance as well as updating buildings to meet modern and current standards. So all our colleges and universities have plans that align with their academic plans, their strategic enrollment management plans, their diversity, equity, and inclusion plans that provide the facilities to support those plans. But we're way behind on the facilities part of it because of the funding aspect of it, of being able to stay current with it. So as an example, at Bemidji State, there was significant work done, as an example, and you may have seen this on your campus tour, of tearing down an old facility, Hag Sauer, that was about 90,000 square feet, and replacing it with a facility that was less than half that size to modernize the classrooms. And that was probably done, it probably started over a dozen years ago and was open probably about 5 years ago. But that time horizon to execute these types of projects has been so long, and you'll hear more about that when we present our capital investment committee. But these are real issues of being able to have enough operating dollars to keep facilities current. And quite frankly, we are behind in that area, as we've articulated, in particular the capital investment committees.
Chancellor Olson.
Chair Pawlowski, Representative Rarick, one last point on this. Yes, it affects enrollment. If campuses are having kind of run down or empty buildings and students are touring and thinking about whether they want to go there or not, that can negatively affect enrollment. And that's why we'll be back in front of you talking about some of those needs.
Representative Rarick, next week we will have a review again of both systems' capital requests with an emphasis on higher education asset preservation. We had it yesterday in the Capital Investment Committee, and I did request, and Chair Lee also requested, that the breakdown of higher education asset preservation be done by campus and it be done by rank order, so that the number one item and then all the way through. So you're going to see on both systems the higher education asset preservation by campus and in order. And in my comments in the committee yesterday, I don't know how much money we'll have in capital investment, but I'm hoping we'll go along with the system's request to the extent we can with the funding that we have. So you'll be able to see where any structure is that needs to be repaired across both systems.
Mr. Chair, final
comment. Representative Rarick, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick wrap-up comment.
Sure.
So thank you for that, and I look forward to that conversation and talking about how buildings and the disintegration of some of these buildings are just. And I did tour Hag Sauer's new replacement building. I guess it's beautiful, it's modern, it overlooks the beautiful lake of Bemidji, Lake Bemidji. So it's amazing. It's such a gem, and I say that probably a little biasly because I grew up there and I went to school there, but. It's sad to me to see the decline in enrollment, and I knew that for decades it had this, as you know, Vice Chancellor, this incredible draw for people that really loved music, and they used to tour internationally. You know, they would take their choirs and tour internationally with Dr. Brandvik, who composed all kinds of things. So it's sad for me to see the disrepair of the building. So thank you, and I look forward to that conversation as we move forward, because I'm sure it has an impact in who comes and who doesn't come. And
if you like the Minnesota State list, wait till you see the University of Minnesota $500 million request list on just asset preservation.
Yeah.
It's a stunner. Yeah. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have sort of a follow-up question, or it's related, maybe dovetailing to that. Just as you look out into the future, which I know you have to do to a certain extent, and you know, this last session going from almost a $20 billion surplus to now running a deficit in the out years, what are you doing to prepare for that? And especially given with this North Star promise, I would guess that you're projecting that enrollment will go up. And so what's going to be the game plan going forward when there are deficits that we're facing?
Chancellor Olson.
Chair Pawlowski, Representative Scott, all of our campuses are expected to have a balanced budget every year. So they have to meet those goals, whether or not their enrollment goes up or goes down, they have to have a balanced budget. Some of them have reserves that allow them to balance the budget for a short period of time, but over time you can't always rely on that. I think we mentioned earlier that we're expecting applications are up 18% for the fall. We don't know how many of that percentage will actually arrive. We are projecting enrollment growth for the fall, but you have to hope for the best while you plan for the worst. So all the campuses are budgeting conservatively so that they have a balanced budget come July 1 and beyond. And the money you gave us the one-time money for this fiscal year helped campuses, tied them over to do that planning. Lots of our campuses are looking at reductions in staffing and other expenses to meet those goals.
Representative Scott.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. Do you have some data over, you know, with the declining enrollment since, I mean, we have a sheet here that goes back to 2019. I think it's the trend started before that. But do you have some data on, you know, decreases in faculty and staff during that time that we could see? And then, yeah, I guess I would just leave it there. And because I know that those are some of the measures that you have to take. Nobody wants to take them, but as you said, you have to have a balanced budget. And what I also don't want to see is with deficits in the future is the need to raise tuition. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott, if you recall last session, we went back to 2013 with all the systems. So that you should have that data. If you don't, I do, and I'll even send it to you after the committee.
Mr. Chair, does that include if they, you know, staff and faculty that?
It did not include staff and faculty, but if they can provide that, we'll certainly accept it.
Right. So thank you. That's what I'm interested in.
That would be a good push. And I see Vice Chancellor Mackey's nodding his head, so I think they can provide. Mm-hmm. Representative Scott, are you finished?
Okay.
Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my first year in the legislature was 2019. So I have a short-term memory of being on this committee. I do know when I came to the legislature, I was appalled when I learned the numbers of deferred maintenance, not just at the university system, but in all state-owned properties. And I started looking into how did that happen and the requests that have been made through the decades that were never funded. And I'm sure people had different reasons for saying yes or no. We have red and green buttons, and we are always juggling priorities. So I'm not blaming or shaming. But I believe that part of the issues that our university is facing today lies at the feet of the legislature for not funding, repairing, or maintaining the buildings that the taxpayers have paid for and allowing them to go into decline. So the question of chicken or egg, which is worse, no students, so we don't repair the buildings, or we have bad buildings, so we attract zero students, right? I don't know which is the problem. So with the deferred maintenance piece, what I would like for you to keep in front of us is not just the amount of the request that you're bringing to us, but the total amount of the need, right? Because in looking at the request in comparison to the need, we get a fuller and more robust picture. So it's not just what you think you might be able to get from us, but let us know what were the investments that we are allowing to rot. I think that's important. Then when it comes to the revenue side of the equation, you know, I'm all about making school more accessible for students. And students today are not traditional 18-year-olds coming straight out of high school and going. So we do need online access. We need 24-hour access. We need a whole host of opportunities for students to participate. However, I am concerned about some of the contracts that I have heard of about online programming. And I want to make sure that we are not entering into contracts that may really give online companies a platform to just harvest cash from both our students and our institutions, and Minnesota is not receiving the benefit, right? And then the last thing I want to say is the importance of our state colleges and universities is even somewhat different from the University of Minnesota, which is a research institution. But our state colleges and universities provide a community hub, and they are economic drivers, and you've heard me say this before. We cannot afford for your institutions to fail. You are often the largest employer of the districts that you serve, and as our population ages, I think you also have a really important opportunity to step up and become a hub for our aging population to remain engaged and vibrant and give back to community. So I think we need to think about the role of our state colleges and universities in a larger picture there as well. So as you're talking about excess space, I want you to be careful not to shed that space, but think about how the state can use that space for other opportunities and needs of the state. So anyway, it's just a broader conversation I would like to have. There's not really a question here, but I would like to see those broader numbers in this conversation. Thank you.
Chancellor Olson.
Chair Pawlowski, Representative Cleavorn. So I heard three kind of threads running through your comment. One was just asset preservation falling behind, HEPR. Every year that I've been back in Minnesota, 20 years, you know, in the Minnesota state system, every one of those biennia, the number one request for capital investment from our system has been the HEPR. It's always number one on our list. I suppose you may have theories about why other things get funded instead of fully funding HEPR, but we do have charts that show not only the current request, but the backlog of requests, and we will probably provide that to you when we're before you talking about capital investment. To your concerns about these online kind of program, these online programs, I'm actually proud of the way the system office looked at some of those proposals and carefully went through them and ensured that there were guardrails so that the best interests of the institution and the best interests of students and Minnesota were preserved. We could talk about that more in the future, because I imagine there is some interest in that on the part of members of this body. And then to this idea of our campuses being community hubs, I couldn't agree with you more. They are already that, and so lots of the arts and entertainment and athletic programming in some of our communities is going on our campuses, often at no charge to those things. I know in Winona, the Great River Shakespeare Festival, the Beethoven Festival uses Winona State's property at no charge to be just a resource to southeastern Minnesota. And likewise, the Catholic high school in Winona, which is called Cotter, uses the football stadium at no charge. So we are that, exactly that.
Not give Chair Pawlowski more opportunity to promote Winona.
Representative Cleavorn and Chancellor Olson, I want to remind you that the previous chair of this committee, Representative Lyndon Carlson, made it a requirement by law that your first request had to be higher education asset preservation. Because of the problem he saw, and this is decades ago, that new buildings were bumping off, repairing roofs, heating and ventilating systems, asbestos removal. So that should be always our number one priority, Representative Cleavorn. I'm glad you brought it up. Chancellor.
Chair Pawlowski, maybe it's human nature, but I'll confess I myself have more fun putting a shovel in the ground or cutting a ribbon than I do spreading tar on a roof. So there may be a reason why things get funded the way they do. But asset preservation, these are Minnesota's assets that we have to preserve.
Well, Chancellor Olson, you heard yesterday my suggestion to the University of Minnesota that instead of just seeking alumni to provide new buildings, they started seeking alumni support to repair the ones they have.
Yes.
Representative Cleavorn, sorry, we interrupted your...
No, that's okay. I interrupted it with the Winona comment. So, the other thing I want to make sure of is that, you know, you talked about the highest cost that you have, 75% of your cost, you said, is human, right? It's human. And the people bring the richness to our campus. The people know their students. People know the needs of our state, right? And I think at some point we as a state got a little short-sighted in not promoting. We were more STEM and not STEAM, and we know the importance of the arts in developing the whole person and developing executive function. We know that. That's well documented. But I want to make sure that when we do think about how we can economize using online classes, that we are also making sure that those online classes are being taught by Minnesotans, right? So that we are not diluting the richness that we have in our state by allowing those employment opportunities to go outside of our state, and we're focused on keeping our people employed. Thank you.
Rick, Chancellor, you want to respond? Or?
Chair Pulaski, Representative Cleavorn, as I mentioned earlier, the graduates of Minnesota State overwhelmingly come from and stay in Minnesota. We are enriched by international students who come and bring new perspectives from around the world to help us learn and grow. And they may not stay in Minnesota, but I would argue there's some enrichment from having an international population here too.
So Chancellor Olson, I would just suggest, and following up on your statement, that the administrators that are being hired across our campuses, it would also be a good idea if perhaps they came from Minnesota and were nurtured within the system. I think that may help the stability that we have had lacking across our system. When you import somebody who just comes and wants to do whatever it is they want to do and then they leave, the stability of these colleges and universities is essential. And that means we have to have somebody that knows what's going on in Minnesota.
Chair Pulaski, I'm all for hiring Minnesotans.
Okay. Representative David.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought it was a very good presentation today. I'd like to thank Mr. Mackey and for the job that you do and the others that testified. I do want to clear up the record, however. There was a comment made earlier about how the last 11 years at my alma mater and your alma mater didn't have very strong leadership. I beg to differ with that. I think they had tremendous leadership, and I'm excited that that leadership is now going to be in the statewide system. So thank you so much, everyone that testified today. And Chancellor, you do a great job, and I appreciate it.
And Representative Davids, I think you just illustrated the point I just made about making someone from Minnesota a leader, and it's done a great job doing it. Representative Rarick, and we're pressing time.
Just final two things. So, and to that point, Chair, there was a statement made earlier that 80% of our graduates stay in Minnesota. And I just want to put that in context, because I was able to go to a dinner not too long ago with Midwest Higher Education Compact with Susan Hegart, and Chair Pulaski, I believe, is a part of that compact. And it was pointed out to us very clearly and loudly and emphatically that 80% is not a good statistic, unfortunately, because what happens is all of the states around us are net importers, and we are a net exporter, but 20% leave and don't come back. So that actually was pointed out that that's very problematic, that we do want Minnesota students to be educated here, stay here, or educated somewhere else and come back. But we're losing, we have a net loss of that 20%. So, and that's unlike our neighboring states around us. So I wanted to point that out. That when you said that, it made me think of it. And then the last thing, something that was brought to my attention just before the meeting, was the payroll system at Minn State has issues. And so I want to raise that here and now so that we can have a further conversation about it. So I'm wondering if you have any, I'm sure you're aware because it's been brought to your attention, but I wanted to bring it to this attention that there is an issue with your payroll system and that some of your faculty have had errors in their paychecks or just missing paychecks altogether. So I'm just wondering if you could address that in the last couple minutes we have.
All right, Chancellor, we're down to just a couple minutes.
Chair Pulaski, Representative Rarick, it's true that a number of our employees, not just faculty employees, have had either overpayments or underpayments, and it has to do with a number of factors. Some are errors. Some have to do with the timing of when somebody's hired. We're in the process of introducing a new student and employee record system too, which will simplify some of these things and complicate others. But what you describe is accurate. The approach we're currently using, we began when one of our institutions, this is, 8 years ago perhaps, one of our institutions had a 70% error rate in terms of overpayments and underpayments. That concerned our Board of Trustees greatly. They wanted to see some kind of a system-wide standardization of how this was handled. That has greatly reduced the number of the errors you're talking about, which now are under 1% from at that institution, was 70%. However, for any one of the folks that are in that category that got an overpayment or an underpayment, it's unacceptable, and we're trying to drive that number down to zero. And our Vice Chancellor for HR, Eric Davis, is working very hard to make sure that that number hits zero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rarick, anything else? Representative Rarick, I'm not the biggest fan of the Midwest Higher Education Compact. I find their information to be, in most cases, obsolete and inaccurate. It took this committee to decide that we had a 10-year ongoing massive enrollment decline in all of our systems for which that compact provided almost no information. So it take everything with a little grain of salt, and particularly when you're eating at the St. Paul Hotel while I'm up here in another meeting. So with that, meeting is adjourned.